So how have your travels been going lately? Are you eager to get out there and make new friends who can brighten your day? Let us know a highlight or two from your recent adventures, or even something memorable from a while back, so that the rest of us can be inspired to explore the world too. We're at 877-333-RICK. Ed is calling in from Los Angeles. Ed, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Doing great. Have you been traveling anywhere interesting lately?
One of the best trips I've taken recently is with my son. We traveled to Ireland and to Scotland. One of the most memorable things about traveling to Scotland, it was a fall evening, and we were able to go to Edinburgh Castle just as the sun was setting, and it was just a magnificent sight, I have to tell you.
You know, I've been on Arthur's Seat just across the way. That's that craggy peak just across town from Edinburgh Castle, and when the sun is going down, all that sort of time-stained, stony architecture just takes on a special glow, and to be able to see the skyline of Edinburgh, and including the Edinburgh Castle, is just, it's a great spot to be, and that's that magic hour just when the sun's going down.
There's something about a northern European capital that is just a special place, not necessarily in the dead of winter, but in the fall, in the autumn. The weather is crisp, but it's not bone-chilling cold, and it's not the tourist season, so the town isn't flooded with tourists, and November is a wonderful time to go.
You said northern European town. I'm thinking Gdansk in Poland. I'm thinking Stockholm in Sweden with the archipelago and its fortifications, Tallinn in Estonia, Bergen in Norway. There's so many places. When you went to Edinburgh Castle, are you Scottish? Is that why it had a special impact on you?
Yes, actually. My father took me there when I was 11. We were able to go to the top. It was a beautiful November day as well. We traveled by train, and you know, we were there for the day, and we have some wonderful photographs from that time. It was the mid-70s. So I took my son to the same spot, and it just happened to be the same month, but it wasn't during the day. It was just at dusk, and it was just it was a magical, magical place. And we do have Scottish ancestry, but just something that you feel deep within your bones, deep within your soul.
Especially where your kin is, where your tribe came from. I was in Scotland for a couple of weeks, and I'm not Scottish, but every time I came into a different region, you know, I'd go to the major clan castle, and each of those castles was like the spiritual homeland of that clan, and they would have the documents and the artifacts and the battle-dented armor and swords and all of the information, so people who are tracking their genealogy could come there and connect all the dots. I must have gone to, boy, 8 or 9 different castles, and each one had that same power for the people of that clan. And I found it to be a beautiful experience. Each one was still lived in by the leading family, and they would post photographs of the man and the woman of the house and their children just to remind visitors who were paying to help them, you know, cover their costs, because it's hard to keep up a castle like that, but remind them that this is still a lived-in castle and it's a living history, and if you're from this clan, this is your spiritual homeland.
Yeah, that's very well put. All of those places are so welcoming, whether you have any historical roots there or not. You know, we received the same wonderful welcoming reception in Ireland, all over the country, and we've just had such a magnificent time traveling with our children in Europe. It's a wonderful, magical place, and it's a great place to take your kids.
Ah, I was just going to think that's a great experience to share with your son there in Edinburgh. Ed, thanks for your call.
Very true. Very good talking to you, Rick.
You too. Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and Paul's calling in from Stillwater, Minnesota. Paul, thanks for your call.
Hello, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. So my wife and I finally are making it to Iceland. So I've been flying through Reykjavik for about 30 years now and never got outside the airport.
Oh, so, my. Icelandic Air has always had this wonderful stopover thing for budget travelers. Decades ago, everybody would fly through there, but a lot of people just hung out at the airport and caught another airplane. But you could take a few days and check out Iceland. That's what, you know, thousands and thousands of people are doing.
Right. Yep. So we've got about a week in Iceland now. You know, we will be, given the amount of time that we have, the ring road is not probably on the radar on this trip. Seems to be take a longer than we have. So we'll be doing the Golden Circle. And then we'll be going down, I think, to the south coast. And one of the questions that I had was, I know from your book and from reading that, you know, you can do the Golden Circle in a long day trip from Reykjavik and come back to Reykjavik if you really, you know, if you really want to. But then you may not see all the less popular places along the way.
Right.
But we plan on, since we have time, to spend maybe a couple of days actually in and around the Golden Circle.
Right.
Do you have any strong recommendations for, like, side trips on the Golden Circle?
Well, let's look at the bigger picture here. You got 5 days. You got to see Reykjavik, the capital, but you can see it in one busy day of sightseeing. You got the south coast,
yep,
which is wonderful. The south coast is like everything you're looking for in Iceland, as far as I'm concerned. You got the Westman Islands, which I think the Westman Islands are just great. And you've got this Golden Circle, a long day loop inland from Reykjavik.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Blue Lagoon, which is the touristy spa out by the airport. So if I was going to, yeah, you could spend 2 days on the Ring Road, or not the Ring Road. By the way, people who are thinking about doing the whole loop, that's called the Ring Road. Iceland is like totally uninhabited in the middle. And there's one road, Highway 1, that goes all around the island, 800 miles. And you wouldn't want to do it in 5 days. You could, but it's too much to do in the time that you've got. But what I would do, though, and I struggled with this because I thought the Golden Circle is so cool. Let's give it another day. But really, it's a charm bracelet of wonderful little straightforward things to knock off as you do it. There's not a lot. There's more to do in the way of side trips, I think, from the south coast than on the Golden Circle.
Okay.
So I would do 2 nights and 1 day in Reykjavik, 1 day for the Golden Circle. I would do 1 day on Westman Islands, and then I would do 2 days on the south coast. All along the south coast, there are little roads that go inland, and this is where you could have those side trips if you wanted to, and you could take those little hikes if you wanted to.
Good. Good to know. Okay, so yeah, so maybe that we revisit that.
Yeah, I'm not putting down the Golden Circle. I'm just saying it can be mm-hmm. done in a sort of a efficient way, because you know, you're going to see the geyser, you're going to see a couple of great waterfalls, you're going to see the farm that makes everything out of tomatoes, you know, you're going to see the horse ranch, you're going to have your soup here with this wonderful rustic ambience. It's all pretty straightforward, and the main thing is it's a beautiful drive. And then you get back to Reykjavik, and the next morning you head for the south coast. One way you could spend a lot of extra time would be to hire a local tour company to do horse riding or these jeep trips that go, you know, cross country into the interior, which are really quite dramatic. But it doesn't sound like you're doing that. It sounds like you've got a rental car and you're just on your own, which is probably what I would do. But you're in the right mm-hmm. track. I just think I would make the Golden Circle a very long day, and then I would have more time for the south coast and the Westman Islands.
Mm-hmm.
One very important point is everybody spends $100 to go to the fancy spa, you know, the mineral hot springs at the Blue Lagoon. It's the big touristy thing that the tourist board really pushes out by the airport. Most people that I know who really love and know Iceland, they would rather go for $10 to just the town hot springs. You know, just the swimming pool where all the kids go. And that's a wonderful slice of local life. There's no tourist there. It's just local people. And it costs you $10 instead of $100. So you have that choice. But on the other hand, everybody's going to always ask you, did you do the Blue Lagoon? And then you'll always have to say,
yeah,
no, Rick Steves told me to do the little community bath. But you know, you can do both,
yeah,
I suppose. So, hey, thanks for your call,
yeah,
Paul.
I appreciate your advice. Thanks again, Rick.
Take care. Bye now. We're checking in with you, our listeners, to Travel with Rick Steves to hear your travel stories. By the way, if you email us a short travel yarn to radio@ricksteves.com, we might be able to read it the next time we record an open phone segment for the show. Or we could notify you when that is so we can talk in person. Michelle in Livermore, California emails us. Michelle writes, I was shopping at the flea market in Paris's Clignancourt and I found a blown glass lamp I wanted to buy. I didn't have enough cash. This was before they took credit cards. The shopkeeper let me take the lamp and said he'd pick up the money at my hotel's front desk after I went to the bank. My hotel was a half-hour metro ride from his shop. I took the lamp. I promised him I'd leave the money. He came by and got the money. Who in the United States would do that for anyone, especially a foreigner? That's a good point. You'll be surprised at how friendly and trusting the people you meet in Europe can be. And Michelle has a very nice memory, as well as a nice glass lamp from the flea market in Paris. And Ethna's calling from Orlando. Ethna, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Rick. I enjoyed your program about Belgium so much that I had to let you know. I had lived in Belgium for 5 years and just loved living in that country. Hard to believe that it's just the size of the state of Maryland, but a beautiful place to live.
Really is, isn't it? It's sort of in the middle of Europe. You can just, within a couple of hours, you're in Paris or Amsterdam or the Rhine River or London.
Yep, very convenient and a great integration of cultures and nationalities.
Well, it is. It's essentially a bilingual country, right? So you've got French-speaking people and Flemish-speaking people, like Dutch. What part of the country did you live in?
Yes, I lived in Brussels, but I worked at the airport, which is in the Dutch-speaking part. And interestingly, when I got the job, I was hired because I was bilingual in French. And when I got there, found out that the airport in Zaventem is in the Flemish-speaking part of the country. And the airport director, he was Flemish, and every weekly meeting that we had for the airline station managers, the meetings were conducted in English. So it was very funny because when I told my boss that he hired me for the job because of my bilingual in French, but I really only used my French when I was off the job on the weekends or, you know, my days off or whatever. So it was very funny.
Did you feel that there was any sort of a tension between the Flemish and the French-speaking population in that single country?
Sometimes, you know, with politics, that's the way it is sometimes. But at the airport, my staff were trilingual. They spoke Flemish, English, and French, mm-hmm. but they were very, very, got along very, very well together, even though some were Flemish and some were French, Walloon, as they're called.
So you could actually function in English in a country where English was the third language, really, after
yes.
Flemish and French. I've noticed in the airports in Belgium and in the Netherlands, English is so widely spoken, and there's so many people flying through and so on, that they almost dispense with the local language, and signs are in English only.
Yep, that was how it was when I worked there. I had a funny incident one day. One of the agents who was Flemish-speaking, the customer got off the airplane and said, where can I get a drink of water? And the agent said, she had a very sweet accent, and she said, you can just go over there and drink from the toilet. And the word in French for toilet, of course, is toilette, but that means bathroom. And she was sending her to get from the water fountain, but she said you could drink from the toilet.
So she was saying go to the restroom and get a drink.
Yes,
and she said drink. There's a good example of a little bit of a language problem.
right.
I would have think, what did I do wrong? What did I do to deserve this treatment? Go drink from the toilet.
Right. And the lady was American, of course, and she looked at her and she says, drink from the toilet? And then I interceded and I said, she means the bathroom's over there. There's a water fountain. You can drink from the water fountain, you know, and I explained what toilette meant.
Oh, yeah.
It was very funny.
Well, it's a fascinating country to travel in. And if you're in Brussels, for instance, you're within less than an hour. You can be at every one of the great sites in the country, whether it's Bruges or Ghent or Antwerp. It's just fascinating. And the people are so well-educated and things are so well-organized and they've got a wonderful respect for their heritage and they're investing in the future. It's just, to me, it's kind of like the epitome of Europe.
Yes.
If you want a microcosm of Europe, you go to Belgium, and it's no wonder that the headquarters of the European Union is right there in Brussels.
Right. And NATO.
And NATO, too. That's
yes.
right. Well, Ethna, thanks so much for your call. Happy travels.
Thank you, Rick. I love your program.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and Corey's calling from Sacramento. Corey, thanks for your call.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. Wanted to ask you a question. I'm actually going to Italy on my honeymoon, starting off in Venice and then going down to Florence, Positano, and back at finishing up in Rome. So I'm really looking for, like, this super romantic idea that I can do with my wife on our honeymoon that will just, you know, kind of blow her socks off.
Right. I have a friend who's a taxi driver in Sorrento, and his name's Raphael. And he is the coolest gentleman. And if he knew that he was part of your honeymoon, you would have the luxurious limousine kind of treatment. I mean, he's just a cabbie, but he's a wonderful guy who speaks English. He's sort of quintessential Italian. And if you hired him for a day for exploring the Amalfi Coast, including Positano, he could meet you in Positano, by the way, if you're already staying there, which is the most romantic place to stay is Positano. Raphael could meet you for the day and drive you around. And if you let him know you were looking for romantic moments, he knows all the places. So I would recommend having a driver for the Amalfi Coast. So that's one thing that comes to mind. In Rome, I would go to a restaurant called Il Gabriello. Il Gabriello. It's about a 5-minute walk from the Spanish Steps. And it's run by a wonderful chef named Claudio. And let him know that he'll serve you at your table. And let him know it's your honeymoon, and you'll have experience in Rome you will never forget. The main thing in Florence to have a romantic time is not to be standing in lines. And, you know, because it is just exasperating, all the lines in Florence, because everybody wants to go to the same places. But I would recommend, and this is a new thing for me, the Pitti Palace, and the Pitti Palace with a local tour guide who's an art historian. Because the Pitti Palace is a luxurious, just a lavish palace, completely hung with gorgeous art. And the most famous pieces of art are in the Uffizi Gallery, and that's where all the tourists go because it's kind of a bucket list thing. But if you want this holistic, artistic, cultural, palatial, romantic, Medici, Florence Renaissance experience, go to the Pitti Palace with a local guide. Italians are really romantic, so if they know it's your honeymoon, know how to say luna di mille. That's the word for honeymoon, luna di mille, while you're in Italy. And, you know, play the honeymoon card as much as you can.
Awesome. That's great to know. One of the things that I think we're looking at doing when we're in Florence is taking kind of like a Tuscan, you know, wine excursion out to the Tuscan countryside and hitting up San Gimignano, seeing, you know, the medieval town.
Yeah. If you're going to San Gimignano, it's a hot, sweaty, disgusting, commercial, touristic zoo during the day.
Okay.
In other words, I don't like it. But after hours, it's great. If you went to San Gimignano for dinner and then had a walk with the floodlit town after hours, nobody's there. It's just you in this most gorgeous town. But during the day, you can't get a place to park your tour bus. There's so many tour buses there, and it is the tackiest tourism. So I want to make it really clear. You want to steer away from the tourist crowds in the day in San Gimignano. Hey, Corey, I just thought of something in Florence that could really be a very cool thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm not an artist. I've never had any painting experience or anything like that. But I went to a fresco painting workshop, and an artist taught me and my friends how to make a fresco. And we were copying a Michelangelo figure, and I did a bust of a woman from the Renaissance, and it turned out so great. And I had an artist hold my hand and help me through the whole process of making a fresco, and it was a treasure. I've still got it on my wall in my office. And I think if you and your wife-to-be had a fresco time and you each made a fresco of each other with the instruction of the local artist, that would be really cool.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. I really like that.
It's a souvenir about the size of a regular piece of, copy paper or regular notebook paper. And it is the actual fresco process that all the great artists did, you know, in past centuries. It's you know, it'll cost you a few $100, but boy, what a special souvenir of your time together in Florence on your honeymoon.
Absolutely. That sounds like something that, you know, would be cherished forever.
It sure would. All right. Hey, thanks for calling, and best wishes on your trip. What a great, exciting thing to look forward to.
All right. Thank you.
Bye now.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Kasmira Hall and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Look at Rick's checklist for what to pack in your suitcase and share tips with fellow travelers. It's part of our online travel forum that you'll find at ricksteves.com.